I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the very last day of March. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, the John Doe 2 investigation, the history, the legal challenges, the Wisconsin Supreme Court saying late last week that they would not hear arguments in the John Doe cases. They will decide the matter based on briefs that have been filed, and most of those are secret. There have been some that have been leaked. We'll also look at the potential conflict of interest that faces some members of the court as two of the groups under investigation in the John Doe probe, Wisconsin Club for Growth and Citizens for a Strong America, played a large role in electing the four justices in the conservative majority. Jay Heck is our guest this hour, Executive Director of Common Cause. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit citizens lobby that focuses on campaign finance, ethics, and lobby reform, open meetings, and other issues concerning the promotion and maintenance of clean, open, responsive, and accountable government. Jay became the executive director in 1996. We'll be welcoming phone calls on these issues, and here's how you reach us this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. That's 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Jay, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, Kathleen, very good to be with you again.
Yeah, great to have you. It's been a while. Let's start with this potential conflict of interest, which I find interesting, because we do have quite a few members of the court who were under investigation. Two of the groups under investigation in this John Doe probe played a role, a pretty big role. They gave a lot of money to four of the justices in the conservative majority. One in the liberal minority has already recused herself. But they've been among the top spenders in Wisconsin Supreme Court races in recent years. Do you think these people should step aside and say, I can't really look at this case objectively?
Well, you know, I do. Unfortunately, Wisconsin has a very weak recusal rule that was adopted, I believe it was 2009. And what the rule says is that if you're a Supreme Court justice and parties come before you, you do not have to step aside if one of the parties or more of the parties made either large campaign contributions to your election or spent outside money in your behalf. And, you know, that's seemingly in conflict with a major U.S. Supreme Court decision that that came down fairly recently. It's called the Massey case, in which in West Virginia, an outside group spent about $2 million on behalf of a Supreme Court candidate who was running, and then that candidate was elected and then made a decision favoring the person or the entity that contributed all the money, and then that decision was thrown out. But in Wisconsin, you know, states, I guess, are allowed to receive their or make their own recusal rules. So we don't have anything that compels them. But nevertheless, as you said, you know, Wisconsin Club for Growth, which is a major party in this secret John Doe investigation, and we should probably explain at some point what a John Doe is and,
yes,
and what the case is all about. But,
yep.
But Wisconsin Club for Growth, a big spender in support of four conservatives on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Rogensack, Ziegler, Gabelman, Prosser. About $1.75 million, but they also gave money to other groups, and certainly Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which Wisconsin Club for Growth has worked closely with, $5.6 million in support of those candidates since 2007 when Ziegler won, 2008, 2011, and 2013 in the Rogensack race. So, yeah, money's a big issue, and it's one of the reasons why people have said that these justices ought to step down, but apparently they're not going to.
And nobody, to the best of our knowledge, has made a public statement. None of the justices have spoken publicly about this very issue and whether or not they will recuse themselves and why.
I haven't heard such statements. We know that the special prosecutor in the John Doe case, Francis Schmidt, Schmitz had requested that one of the justices, at least, and the justice wasn't named, ought to recuse themselves for being the beneficiary of this outside money. But we haven't heard, at least I haven't heard, public statements saying that they will recuse themselves, or exactly who it was that Schmitz was looking for. It may have been all four, and that, of course, is because, as you mentioned at the outset, this is largely a secret investigation, which is one of the reasons why we're not going to hear, the public won't hear oral arguments about it on April 17th and April 20th when the trial's expected to commence.
And just as a point of reference, I read somewhere that if the justices who did get funding from some of these groups did recuse themselves, what would happen? That we don't have a policy in the state of Wisconsin, who would hear this case?
Well, there has to be a quorum, I guess, of justices to hear a case, and if all four of them did, there wouldn't be a quorum, and a quorum would be 4 of 7. So if you knock those four out and Justice Bradley has already recused herself, that would leave two, Crooks and Abrahamson, and that wouldn't be enough to try the case. And I guess I don't know what would happen. I guess it would go, could it be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court? I suppose it's possible. I don't know. Because, you know, this case is actually kicked. It's kicked between state and federal courts several times already.
Right.
I'm not an attorney, unfortunately, so I don't know what the next step would be.
Yeah, it's just an interesting question.
Yeah.
Well, this has gone on for so long that I think many people have lost track of what the initial probe was and why it has gone on for so long. John Doe 2 was for what reason?
Well, John Doe 2 actually stems from John Doe 1, and so you have to at least touch on John Doe 1, and that was the investigation that began actually about the time Scott Walker was elected governor, but it really centered on an investigation of illegal activity in the Milwaukee County Executive's office. And the investigation actually uncovered a number of different crimes and resulted in the conviction of 6 Walker aides, associates or appointees, and they were convicted of charges ranging from theft from a veterans group to misconduct in office and to illegal campaign contributions. So, and then it was out of some of the information gleaned in the John Doe, and that's an important part of John Doe, is that John Doe goes in and may find some wrongdoing, but then that may lead to something else. As a result of that and some other things, the John Doe 2 investigation commenced in, I think it was about August of 2012. It was following the recall election of Governor Walker in June of 2012. And you'll recall in 2011 and 2012, there were a number of state Senate recall elections as well. And really what it centers on, what the heart of it, Kathleen, is whether or not under Wisconsin law there was illegal coordination, which means which is to say there was discussion, strategy, talk between Governor Walker's campaign in the recall with primarily Wisconsin Club for Growth, which is this big outside pro-business group which has been around in Wisconsin for many years. And under Wisconsin law, it is illegal for campaigns to be in coordination with outside groups who are spending money in their behalf. And in the case of Wisconsin Club for Growth, they spent money, what are called outside ads, and we're all familiar with what those are. Those are not ads that are run by the candidates themselves, but by outside special interest groups. And they were in the form of what we call issue ads, what I call phony issue ads, campaign ads that are really masquerading as issue advocacy. But the whole point of the and the contention that's involved is under Wisconsin law, it's illegal for those groups to coordinate, at least according to the current reading of the law. But there are groups like Wisconsin Club for Growth that have asserted that if they're running issue ads instead of what are called express advocacy, which are ads that say vote for, vote against, if they're voting for ads that discuss issues in candidates, then that is free speech. That's a First Amendment right, and it shouldn't be subject to the laws of illegal coordination. Now, that runs in the face of how it works in Wisconsin, because there were issue ads run for Justice Wilcox in 1997, not Express Advocacy, but just issue ads, and his campaign was convicted of illegal campaign coordination. He was fined. Justice Wilcox, who won that election, by the way, was fined $10,000, the largest fine ever given to a statewide candidate in Wisconsin, and that's the law that is still on the books. But that's the bone of contention.
Mm-hmm.
And as John Doe, as we've said before, it is a secret investigation, and it is used in Wisconsin. has been used since before statehood. Other states don't. There are some states that have John Does, but really most states use what are called grand jury investigations rather than John Does. John Does tend to be more efficient, less expensive, and they're the preferred method by district attorneys around the state to investigate not just political corruption, but crimes of all sorts,
mm-hmm.
violent crimes, drug crimes, all kinds of things. Grand jury investigations are a rare thing in this state.
Jay, would there have been a way to get at all this information? Because the public would like to know what's going on here. We elected people, we'd like to know if it's above board, if we have clean government. Was there a legal way for this to happen without all of it having to be a John Doe, without all of it having to be secret?
Well, you know, at some point, there was a John Doe, for instance, that was used to uncover all the wrongdoing in the infamous legislative caucus scandal. You
mm-hmm.
remember that happened in 2001, 2002. And the process took a while. It took about a year and a half before there were actually finally criminal charges made of two top Democrats and three top Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature. So, you know, at some point after the charges are filed, the information, at least some of the information, comes out, not all of it, but that's probably that's probably when it would have happened. But you'll remember that this particular John Doe was stopped about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and in May of 2014 by a federal judge. And part of the reason why was because one of the parties, Wisconsin Club for Growth, selectively leaked information about the John Doe, information that they thought would cast it in a favorable light to entities like the Wall Street Journal editorial page, a conservative newspaper, who then began to hammer the prosecutors
right.
for being partisan. And keep in mind, this was not, as some claim, a partisan investigation. This was not a partisan witch hunt. This was conducted by three Democratic and two Republican district attorneys and a Republican special prosecutor. And so it wasn't a partisan witch hunt, but Wisconsin Club for Growth leaked the information out, some of it, and then more of it became public through some very strange happenings. Some of it was posted on a U.S. Court of Appeals website inadvertently on a Friday afternoon, and that's how we found out, or a lot of people found out, about some of the other things, like that $700,000
yes.
contribution from the Goba Taconite mine to Wisconsin Club for Growth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's by nature, these things are not public until the criminal charges are filed.
Well, and the problem with all of this is, in a totally bipartisan fashion, I think most people want to know where money is coming from to fund campaigns. And it takes,
yes.
obviously, there were people who were talking to Michael Isikoff last week on his, John Menard giving so much money, and then, you know, what did it result in lax environmental regulations? You know, what were the payoffs for giving that kind of money? People want to know that, and there doesn't seem to be any. Obviously, somebody talked to Isikoff to get that story. So instead of this open government to figure out what's going on with these contributions, we seem to be in the dark about the dark money.
Absolutely, and that is the larger and the bigger problem in Wisconsin and in Congress and in federal level as well. I mean, look, we all realize a lot of us don't accept, but we all realize that the Citizens United decision unleashed all this money in 2010, this outside money that can be spent now from corporate treasuries and union treasuries, unlimited amounts in our elections. But the United States Supreme Court also in that decision said, if we were smart, we would require both at the congressional level and in states the disclosure of that outside money, so at least people would have some idea where it's coming from. And as you suggest, that people don't have any idea. This the John Menard contribution of what was it, $1.5 million,
right.
Was only found out because Isikoff, and I don't even know how he found out,
right.
But through filings. And it should be easier for people to know where money's coming from to influence elections. And, you know, Wisconsin Club for Growth and others have argued that because their ads and their communications didn't say vote for, vote against, that they shouldn't be required to disclose their ads, which is patently ridiculous because those types of communications have just as much influence as a vote for, vote against in the minds of voters. Voters don't know whether it's express advocacy or issue advocacy. All they know is that when they hear that prior to an election, that there's someone trying to influence the outcome of the election, and they should have the right to know where that money's coming from.
Mm-hmm. This was all played, of course, on conservative talk radio and elsewhere as an attack on conservative thought. You know, the raids that took place at some early hour in the middle of the night, and what you're trying to do is just get rid of conservative thought. What did you think of that analysis of what John Doe Probe was doing?
Well, you know, I mean, look, it seemed to me to be very dramatically portrayed, sensationalized, you know, pre-dawn raids,
right.
Floodlights, all the rest. You know, when there is a criminal investigation of any kind, usually the police don't call you ahead of time and say, hey, we're coming over. Please have some coffee ready. I mean, usually the way it's done is that there's a surprise element so that they can get the information that they need to, so it hasn't been destroyed or hidden. So, you know, that was purposeful, and I certainly understand why those groups did that and continue to talk in those paramilitary terms. But nevertheless, you know, if you break the law, or if you're suspected of breaking the law, that's the kind of treatment that almost anybody, not just a political crime, can afford. Again, I take sort of that with a grain of salt, and there's two sides to every story, I'm sure. The prosecutors can't really talk about this because their lips are sealed because of the nature of the John Doe investigation. So, there may be another side to the stories about the pre-dawn raid.
Yeah. So before we go to phone calls, now the Supreme Court, obviously there must be all kinds of information here after such a long probe. That printed information gets turned over to the court and they will begin deliberations on this case, and we won't know what their deliberations are until we hear what the outcome is?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, the central question is whether there was illegal campaign coordination between Wisconsin Glove for Growth and the Walker campaign of 2011, 2012, and maybe some other campaigns. I'm not sure. One thing I want to be clear, Governor Walker is not the subject of the
right.
probe. So that's, everybody on the right who's about to call me, hold your horses. And that's where things are. But this is really to decide on the question of illegal campaign coordination, and then, of course, whether or not this probe could proceed. And that's what the prosecutors have asked. They want to proceed with the probe, and obviously the people aligned with Club for Growth and probably most of Governor Walker's allies want the probe ended and put to bed for good.
Jay Heck is our guest this hour, Executive Director of Common Cause. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit citizens lobby, and they focus on a lot of issues that are pertinent to our conversation this hour. Campaign finance, ethics, lobby reform, open meetings, clean, open, responsive, and accountable government. We're looking at the John Doe 2 probe, which began in August of 2012. There have been lots of legal challenges, and now the Wisconsin Supreme Court has said that they will not hear oral arguments in this case, so they will be deciding whether or not the probe will continue. by looking at the written briefs on all of this. There have been some leaks, as you know, so we know a little bit about what the probe has uncovered. Do you share a viewpoint that maybe some of the justices, because they receive quite a bit of money from the very groups that they are now investigating, that they should recuse themselves from the case here? We just wonder what you think about all of this. Our phone number for you to join the conversation and lines are wide open. I would imagine that you'll have a lot to say. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. We're also on Facebook, where I think we have some messages already, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, let's welcome phone calls. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And we start our calls with Steve in Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thank you for accepting a request. I'd like to find out why we can't use the Wisconsin Open Records. Find out even what John Doe or whatever information they're keeping silent from the public.
Sure. Well, Steve, the
nature of a John Doe investigation is such that it's exempt from open records law. It's because it's a prosecutorial exercise. It's an investigation, and you know, in order to ferret out facts and figure, you know, and get to the bottom of cases, secrecy is often required. The way John Doe's often work is that they will get the testimony of an individual and return, provide that witness with immunity from prosecution. And John Doe's tend to be exercises that will start, you know, at a place. The reason they're called John Doe, by the way, is because sometimes there's evidence of wrongdoing, but it's not clear who's actually doing the wrongdoing. So just by the nature of the beast, it's not subject to open records requests.
Do you have any idea, Jay, how much more work the prosecutors have to do if the Supreme Court should say, go ahead?
You know, it's hard to know because so much of what they have done is unknown. How much evidence they've uncovered is unknown, and they can't really say anything about it. The thing that seems certain, though, is that that obviously the work was not, I don't think, complete. It was ongoing, and there's probably more to do. And I know that disturbs a lot of people. I know there's even legislation that's been proposed that would shorten the period of a John Doe investigation to 6 months, and that you'd have to get reauthorization from a majority of district judges around the state to continue the John Doe. But as I said, you know, the legislative caucus scandal, that investigation took almost a year and a half before criminal charges were made, because there's often a lot of information that they required, or a lot of time and information that has to be uncovered before they can conclude the investigation.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Steve, for the call. John in Janesville. Hi.
How are you doing today?
All right, John. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
I can't figure out, you just said on there that this has nothing to do with the governor, this investigation, but him taking a $1.5 million bribe from Menards so they'd cover up their toxic waste stuff, and then that all being dropped with the DNR, that's a big cover-up, and I think that does have something to do with the governor if he's guilty of this. And then the fact that they aren't letting out any of this information, I think with the votes coming up, people aren't going to vote the way that they would vote if they knew what was going on. But nobody knows what's going on.
Jay.
The governor is, what we know now, actually, from, again, things that were put on the Court of Appeals website, was that Governor Walker engaged in fundraising for Wisconsin Club for Growth, particularly in the period of 2011 when the Senate recalls were going on. He would call, apparently, various entities and ask them to contribute to Wisconsin Club for Growth, who then ran communications in support of senators or against other senators. And apparently that was where the $700,000 for the Taconite mine, they contributed $700,000 to Wisconsin Club for Growth. So we do know that he was engaged in fundraising. Now, whether or not the Menards contribution that that John Menard gave to Wisconsin Club for Growth was a direct result of a phone call from Walker, we don't know. And look, yes, he got favorable treatment, perhaps from the DNR, but you know, the DNR under the Walker administration has been much less restrictive than the DNR, or not much less, but less restrictive than the DNR under, say, Governor Doyle. That's the philosophy of the Walker administration, and the tax credits. You know, I don't know that there's a direct quid pro quo. That's one of the things that would have to be investigated in the John Doe. That's why I believe it ought to continue until we find out the answers to questions like that.
Thanks for the call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. 800-486-8655 is the number. Jay Heck, Executive Director of Common Cause, is our guest, and we're looking at John Doe 2 this hour of the program, the history of John Doe 2, why it's been complicated by a lot of legal challenges to this, the Wisconsin Supreme Court saying late last week that they would not hear oral statements in this, that it will be decided whether or not to proceed with the investigation probably sometime this summer, and they will look at all the material and make the decisions. Their complication or spotlight being put on the Supreme Court because they have received money for their campaigns from the very groups that are being investigated now. So do you see that as problematic in any way? That's what we're talking about. Got a lot on the table this hour. 800-486-8655. Tim in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Tim.
Hello, good day.
Hi.
I miss Russ Feingold. That's about all I really have to say. I mean, we need politicians that have his sense of fairness.
Well, you know, one of the things that Senator Feingold, when he was a U.S. Senator, together with John McCain, enacted into law was the McCain-Feingold law, which really required the disclosure, at least at the federal level, for a lot of the campaign contributions that that have now seemed to go into the dark money category. Transparency is always, I think, better than darkness. The proponents of secret dark money try to make the case that they have the First Amendment right to be able to express themselves, that their money shouldn't necessarily be known to the public because they could be fearful of intimidation. That's a philosophical difference that I happen to have with people of that view. But again, I think when you decide to jump into the public arena, certainly candidates for public office at the federal and state level have to declare all of their donations and the contributors. That's got to be a matter of public record. I think the same thing should apply to outside organizations who are trying to influence the outcome of elections. Not every outside organization should disclose all their donors or all of their contributors, but if you are going to engage in campaigning or electioneering in the period before an election and you're trying to influence the outcome of the vote, I think it's incumbent for you to step up to the plate and say who you are. And Justice Scalia and Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy and the other conservatives on the United States Supreme Court said as much when they unleashed Citizens United upon us. They said if all this money is going to now flow into American politics, then you should step up and tell people who you are. So this idea of anonymity It's kind of quaint and old-fashioned, and I don't think it's legitimate really in our politics today.
Well, it would be incredibly naive, Jay. You couldn't even make the argument that if you were a person or you were an organization that gave millions of dollars to a candidate, that you wouldn't expect that you would expect that person to answer your phone calls, right, and have lunch and be at your table to hear your concerns rather than just you or me who gave a little bit of money and thank you very much. I'll see you next election.
Well, that's right. And now keep in mind what we're talking about is outside money. So this would not be money that would be given directly to a candidate, but it is money that would be spent on their behalf or against their opponent. But that's right. It's counterintuitive. It's a human nature. I always say, look, I always remember my Aunt Mary, who used to include a crisp $10 bill in my birthday card when I was 10. And, Aunt Kate was nice. She sent me a beautiful card, but there was, never a $10 bill in it. So obviously I felt warmer towards the aunt that included the $10 bill. That's human nature.
Right.
And so to suggest otherwise, to suggest that contributions don't have an effect or an influence, it's not necessarily a corrupting influence, but when you're talking about the kind of money we're talking about in American politics and even in Wisconsin politics, it can be corrupting and it can certainly have the appearance of corruption, which the United States Supreme Court has continually said we have the right to regulate if it's corrupting or it gives the appearance of corruption.
Thanks, Tim, for your call. Liz in Fitchburg. Hi.
Well, this runs into my question as well. I understand the First Amendment and how anybody has the right to give money and as much money as they want, but when corporations are considered people too and give millions of dollars to a campaign, and then I give my $10, I feel like my rights are being infringed upon because I don't get the same favors that they would. And if it's just common knowledge, like you said about your aunt, you warm to the person that gives you the most money. So I feel like I'm being discriminated against because I can't compete with that. I can't give that much money, nor can I expect that many favors. So that's where I'm at with this.
Yeah, and I think your sentiment is shared by many people, most people, actually. There's very few citizens who think we need more money in politics. There are some constitutional lawyers that say that's a good thing. There are obviously some campaign consultants that love that because they get a percentage of it. But most people think there's too much money in our politics. And, the way that we're finally going to get rid of, we're finally going to have some curbs on it, is if we start going in the opposite direction. Right now, the Wisconsin legislature is poised to lift contribution limits or at least increase them. They want to codify into law that only vote for, vote against ads ought to be disclosed. That we shouldn't go after these issue ads that are campaign ads. They want to make illegal campaign coordination legal unless you engage in the types of ads that only say vote for, vote against. We're sort of in this period right now in Wisconsin politics where they're trying to unregulate and they're trying to get the system pumped with more money. And I don't think many citizens agree with that. And look, the Citizens United decision has incredible repercussions. It's another reason why voting matters and elections have consequences because, the people who appoint the judges to the United States Supreme Court are elected. And, so it matters a lot who's elected president, who's elected governor, who's elected in almost every office. And if that's not a reason why people shouldn't get out there and vote, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Could we talk just for a moment? Thank you very much, Liz, for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. About the amount of money that's going into Wisconsin Supreme Court races, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign says that the Wisconsin Club for Growth spent at least $1,615,860 on the last four Supreme Court races. Citizens for a Strong America, which is funded by the Club for Growth, spent $836,000. supporting Justice David Prosser's reelection in 2011. There's something that doesn't smell right about the whole thing, but when you've got this kind of money from, you know, strong advocacy groups on the right, in this case, or on the left, shouldn't Supreme Court justices sort of be above that in some way? Isn't there a better way to get our Supreme Court justices?
Well, they used to be, and we actually had a system that was better. One thing you forgot was the $5.6 million spent by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce in those four races, Rogensack, Prosser, Gableman, and Ziegler. It used to be that in Wisconsin, until about 10 years ago, elections were by and large not partisan. They were impartial. They were decided on things like judicial temperament. Imagine that. I don't think anybody's accused the Wisconsin Supreme Court of having judicial temperament lately. But also things like qualifications and endorsements from legal societies. The Wisconsin Bar Association used to mean a lot. And generally, you didn't see elections where more than about $300,000 was spent. And often you couldn't tell. You could sort of tell who was the conservative and who was the liberal, but you know, not really, but that's all changed, obviously, since about 2007 with the election of Justice Ziegler. That was the first big high-money election. And then in 2009, the Wisconsin legislature, in their wisdom and with our strong encouragement, passed something called the Impartial Justice Law, which said that if you voluntarily limit your spending to $400,000, that you as a Supreme Court candidate don't have to raise any money, that the money would come from the public. And that seemed to make sense because, as you mentioned, you don't really want people that have contributed to your campaign coming before the bench. So, but the problem with that was that there was another part of it, which we supplied matching funds to sort of match some of the outside spending, and that was struck down. And then in 2011, the Impartial Justice Law itself was repealed by the Wisconsin legislature. Governor Walker didn't favor it. And so now we're in this wide open space again where anything goes and the money flows. And it's terribly damaging because our court was once looked at as one of the most impeccable, clean, honest, impartial, and that's the most important word, impartial in the nation. And no longer. It's now just the race that's in, and by the way, I don't know if your listeners know this, there's actually a Supreme Court election going on right now.
Right.
It's going to be decided on April 7th, and we're right now seeing big money starting to come in, both before the candidates or against candidates, but also for a constitutional question that's on the ballot about the selection of the Chief Justice and how that should go. And it's all special interest money that's fueling it.
Mm. Nick in Greenfield, our next caller. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi. Your guest, thank you for taking my call, too. But your guest hit on what I was calling about, and that is that now they're trying to gerrymander how the Supreme Court Chief Justice is selected. And what they're doing is that they know that they've got 4-3 comparison on the conservative side. So the conservatives are trying to change that so that they can vote in who they want rather than the way it is now that the justice is selected by the one who has the most seniority and probably with the most seniority the most experience. But that's another type of gerrymander. That's what I had to say.
Yeah, Nick, you're right. This is aimed really at the current Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson, who's been on the court since 1976 and has been Chief Justice since 1996. And a lot of conservatives don't like that. And so they've now succeeded in getting on the ballot this constitutional question. And what would happen is that if it passes, then the justices themselves, as Nick suggests, would choose the Supreme Court justice rather than the most senior member. Now, what they claim is that most states have this system where the chief is chosen by his or her peers rather than, you know, most senior. And that's true. That's the case. And I guess I would have less problem with this if this were to, say, take effect after the completion of her term in 2019. That's the next time Justice Abrahamson runs, and then effective for the next term. If this were in place, then that wouldn't be so obviously aimed at Justice Abrahamson. It would be more of a legitimate institutional change. But nevertheless, that's why they're doing it. They're trying to go after her. And I don't know. They call this more democracy. But I think everybody's pretty clear when Justice Abrahamson runs for election that she is the Chief Justice, and they're voting for her in part because she is, and they vote for or against her on that basis. I don't see how having, you know, 4 of 7 justices decide who's chief is more democratic, and yet the committee that's been organized is vote yes for democracy to pass that ballot question. We're opposed to it, by the way.
And could there be a legal challenge there because people did vote for her?
Well, again, I'm not sure how that would work. My guess is probably if it's a constitutional question, and if it then if this is approved on Tuesday, it then becomes part of the Wisconsin Constitution, and therefore it wouldn't be unconstitutional because you now have a new method of selecting the Chief Justice.
We welcome more phone calls. Jay Heck is our guest this hour. Jay, since 1996, has been executive director of Common Cause in Wisconsin, and we're looking at a number of issues. We're looking at, essentially, how do we get clean, open, responsive, and accountable government, and where are we falling short? We're looking at the John Doe 2 probe. We look briefly at the John Doe 1 probe, the decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court to not hear arguments in the John Doe case so that they will just be reading papers to see whether or not that prosecution will continue to gather information. And we're looking at the big issue of dark money in politics. 800-486-8655. More phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jay Heck is here now. 800-486-8655 is our number, and Mike in Franklin is our next caller. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, okay, I'm a retired union person, and I take great satisfaction when any union runs an ad. When they're done, it says WEAC on the bottom, or SEIU, or AFSCME, full disclosure. However, when Club for Growth runs an ad, or Americans for Prosperity run an ad, there's no disclosure. And that's something that should be available to any citizen that wants to check on it. And that's what I feel about this.
And Mike, I couldn't agree with you more. WEAC, labor unions, there are a number of entities that run what we call independent expenditures and campaign time, although labor less because of Act 10 and right to work. One thing people don't realize is that the real reason those were passed was to go after their political money. But you're right, and groups like Club for Growth and these outside groups should be required, and it would simply take the passage of legislation in the Wisconsin legislature, what we call electioneering disclosure, that would stipulate that not just communications that say vote for or vote against have to be disclosed, they do by law, but that communications that there's really no other interpretation other than they're trying to influence the outcome of elections, and that would be the sort of phony issue ads that Club for Growth, WMC, and others have been running for years, but do not disclose their donors. We could pass a law requiring that they do so in the period before an election. So there would at least be that disclosure, and people would know where the flood of money was coming from. So absolutely right, and that's a matter of political will. It's a matter of political leadership, and those are things that our elected officials are supposed to provide for us.
Let's go to Phil in Maquoneco. Hi.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Okay.
By the way, this is a great show, and I love the topic.
Good.
What if we just had a large general campaign fund that anybody or any entity or corporation can contribute to, and all the money goes in, and then we equally divide it among all the candidates that are running? And I'll take the comment off the air.
All right, Phil, thanks.
It's a great idea. It's something that that a Republican, Senator Michael Ellis, proposed some years ago in a campaign finance reform bill. And he proposed exactly that, have corporations, unions, individuals, whoever they want, contribute as much as they want. They could get some tax benefit from it. It would become a general fund, and then candidates would then be able to draw that money because it would be, you know, it would be Wisconsin money. It wouldn't be special interest money, and regardless of your party, if you could qualify, that's what public financing's all about. That's a form of public financing. It wouldn't come from tax dollars. And it is a great idea. The beauty of public financing is that it makes candidates beholden to the public, not to special interest groups. That's why public financing is desirable. And you can use public financing as a means of requiring candidates to abide by spending limits, which Wisconsinites overwhelmingly favor. The last time we had a statewide referendum, 90% of Wisconsinites favored spending limits. They favored disclosure of outside money. And even in Waukesha County, 80% of Waukesha County residents favor public financing. So, you know, these are things the public wants. The legislature is so behind the eight ball. And again, leadership is needed from both political parties on this issue because the public, I think, is ready to have these kinds of changes.
Jim is next in Green Bay. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there?
Hello. I think I can hear you.
Well, we hear you.
I was thinking about this in the context of when you want something to be made known, you usually stand behind it and affirm it publicly. It's, you would want to have whatever it is be made known and give your voice to it. And the opposite of that, and I don't want to be name-calling, but I'll use a word that never is used, is cowardice. If I'm in favor of something, I want the world to know that. And why wouldn't you, if you would give money towards something, why wouldn't you want the world to know that it was you that was doing it and affirming it, whatever it is, whether it's an election or a proposal for change of government? So I'll take your answer off the air.
Interesting thought.
Yeah, it's central to this discussion. And, you know, let's take John Menard, for example. He wanted to give or did give $1.5 million to Wisconsin Club for Growth, expecting that no one would ever find that out. Now, obviously, Wisconsin Club for Growth knew it. Probably the people that Wisconsin Club for Growth was helping would find out about it, and that was just fine with John Menard. On the other hand, you know, he's got liberals and Democrats that shop at his store, and so maybe he doesn't want that information out there for fear that those people might decide not to shop at his store. And I would argue that, John, if that's the choice you make in terms of how you want to participate in politics, that's great. I agree with the gentleman. Be out there, be out front about it, and let us make that decision about whether we want to shop at your store or not. There should be disclosure. We shouldn't err on the side of secrecy. Secrecy is what leads to corruption and scandal. Mm. It's what led to Watergate in 1972 and the toppling of a president in 1974.
Oh, gee, that phrase public financing is bouncing around in my head, and I think we are so far from that right now.
But we have to climb back.
We are so far. Thank you for your wisdom on all of this. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Jay Heck, our guest this hour of the show, Executive Director of Common Cause. They are a nonpartisan, nonprofit citizens lobby focusing on campaign finance, ethics, lobby reform, open meetings, issues concerning the promotion and maintenance of clean, open, responsive, and accountable government. With us to talk about John Doe tube probe, the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision, not to hear oral arguments, whether or not this will proceed, what they have been investigating, and, of course, the huge issue of dark money lots and lots of dark money in politics in the state of Wisconsin. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about children and adults, really, and cell phones. That's coming up following the news.